I think it was Rio the first time they did that. I might be mistaken on that, but I seem to remember that when the Olympics was in Rio, that would have been 8 years. Was it? No, obviously it would have been 8 years ago. It wouldn't have been a Winter Olympic in
It was
Rio.
2008. It was Beijing the first time that they rolled it out.
Oh,
And then in
okay.
2016, Daily Beast was accused of outing people using, I think it was a different app.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Okay.
yeah, the Rio one in 2016 certainly happened. But yeah, you cannot find gay athletes in the village using Grindr unless you're physically in the village along with 15,000 people at the absolute peak of their prime. So I wanted to talk about the Olympics has also garnered a bit of hot water. Some news, I say news loosely here, some sites are reporting about a Christian backlash to a moment in the opening ceremony. It's worth noting some people have complained about drag queens, for example, holding the Olympic flame. Like, there were three drag queens that at various points in the traveling of the Olympic flame held and moved it X number of feet, including Nikki Doll, the host of RuPaul's Drag Race France. Some people are outraged by that. I would note it's not the first time a drag queen has held the Olympic flame. Also, Snoop Dogg held the Olympic flame. So I'm like, nobody's upset that Snoop Dogg is running around with the Olympic
I
flame,
mean, I could
but a
say
drag queen, oh my gosh.
the one thing that I would say is it should be an athlete. If it's an athlete who used to be in some team or another, or they are a retired Olympiad and they're carrying the thing in drag, I'd be all for that. For me, it's more that the flame should be carried by actual athletes, because the whole idea was that it's supposed to be historically anyway, physically run, pretending that the oceans aren't there. From the Eternal Flame in Athens, and then run relay style hand to hand across wherever to get to where it's going. Obviously, you're not going to do that anymore now that it's around the world. It's going to have to go on a plane at some point. I don't even know if they take the fire from the Eternal Flame in Athens anymore. Can you take a fire onto an airplane safely? I don't know. I mean, obviously, you could just do it in like a little lantern or something, but I would say that it should be athletes doing it. That makes sense to me. And then if you're going to put a prohibition on anyone, it should be like if you're showing up in drag, but you're Mark Tewksbury, then yeah, go for it. I'm all for that. But yeah, I would have an issue with Snoop Dogg, and not even a strong one, like a mildly like a raised eyebrow or a harumph. That is all. It is not even strong. It just makes more sense to have athletes doing it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Having athletes, that makes I'm fully agreed. 11,000 people carried the torch between Greece and Paris, so it is a lot of people.
Yeah, you run out of people eventually.
Yeah, so they have to be fully in support of one of the core tenets of the Olympics. And the French Olympic Committee, I think, chose a lot of folks in French culture that represent Frenchness in some way, key leaders in some different element. When you talk about 11,000, that's a lot of people. Snoop Dogg, by the way, is the NBC special correspondent for the Olympics, so was there with a purpose. But 20,000 people were apparently nominated to be a bearer, and 5,000 of them were selected from that group. The other 15, sorry, the other 6,000, I think, was selected by the committee itself. So a drag queen carrying the Olympic flame when there's 11,000 of them is hardly surprising.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, you run out of people and you start getting creative. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I have not been particularly paying attention to the Olympics. Every single time the Olympics has happened since I was a child, I completely forgot about it until afterwards when people were like, "Hey, the Olympics happened," and then I said, "Oh, okay." In the end, I think it really should be more about athletics, and it should be more about the sport, and it should be more about achievement and you know, the core message. The fact that there is a queer lens being put on it, I don't particularly have a problem with that, so long as it is fundamentally about athletics. I have noticed in sort of LGBT media, there has been a lot of talk about Olympics, but I've also noticed there's a disproportionate attention on Summer Olympics over Winter Olympics.
Mm.
And in the Summer Olympics, there's a disproportionate amount of attention put on sports that are typically done shirtless. So there is a flavor to the attention that doesn't feel authentic to the spirit of athletics. If you hear what I'm saying. So there is.
Yeah, I feel quite targeted by this.
Yeah, I have a mild complaint about the nature of the attention. The fact that Tom Daley, a lot of the focus is being put on, you know, the fact that he's married and he has adopted children and that he's, you know, he's in a monogamous relationship. There is that sort of like wholesomeness that you don't see a lot of in the community. But he's also in a sport which is done in Speedos, and he wears the tiniest of Speedos. So there is that. I do wish you'd get a little bit more, you know, I don't know, slalom skiers and, you know, gay curling, what are they called, stone throwers or whatever. I do wish there was a little bit more attention on clothed and winter LGBT athletes. But yes, the acceptance into athletics of the community of, you know, the dropping of the machismo, I do think is very good. But the nature of it, I think, could use a little bit of less male gaze, I guess you could say. Gay male gaze.
That's fair. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on the women's rugby sevens. In particular, as I think that actually wrapped up recently, to see how that goes in the course, the women's soccer as well. We're going to jump to our next song of the day. This is Le Dauphin et la Princesse by Larche, and we will be back just
Dauphin. After. Le Dauphin. You said princesse. The Dolphin and the Princess.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll be back just after this.
Hello.
welcome back to Cangri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
You are, of course, familiar with the video game Borderlands.
It's probably, it's in my top favorite games of all time. I love that franchise.
Absolutely. Now, I was initially drawn to the upcoming film of Borderlands. Now, film recreations of movies and games is always...
They tend to do poorly.
Yeah, except for recently, the Dungeons & Dragons movie was not bad.
And Tomb Raider, everybody loves the...
the original...
Angelina Jolie... Tomb Raider. It is one of the major exceptions, and generally speaking, also Resident Evil from a campy perspective, like getting drunk with your friends and watching a movie that is good but also kind of laughable. Exactly. You got the Resident Evil movies, but yeah, most of the most famously of all, the 1990 Super Mario movie was a fever dream. So you see a lot of really bad or really campy or really misguided video game movies. There's the Mario movie that came out a couple years ago.
Oh, with Chris Pratt. Why? But yeah, we're going to move. The thing that drew me to the Borderlands, first of all, great, great game.
Yes.
Is Cate Blanchett as Lilith and the incredible Jamie Lee Curtis as Tannis. Mm-hmm. So just Jamie Lee Curtis in anything, it's going to be pretty solid.
Yeah, but I would put Cate Blanchett as Moxie, and then I would have gotten somebody in their late 20s to play Lilith.
Well, I wanted to mention the fact that there has been a story. Apparently, Wainwright Jacobs and Sir Hamlock, Ian Jackson and Charles Babalola, they had recorded the wedding scene. So the wedding took place in a downloadable content, an extra expansion of the game. It was relatively standalone. The expansion for the wedding. They recorded the whole gay wedding. They are two of my favorite characters in the series. But they cut it from the film. And
Xylomorphus happened so late in the story. Like, if you're talking about early Borderlands, it doesn't make sense. And I do love Hammerlock as a gay character. I always come back to Hammerlock as my favorite representation of a gay character in a video game, because it is just the right level. I understand when game critics say that a lot of the LGBT content is being shoved in your face. Sometimes even I, as a gay man, are like, okay, calm down, I get it. And I think Hammerlock was perfect, because in the second game, you get introduced to to Sir Hammerlock. He's a quest giver, and he gives you missions. And one of the missions he gives you is, I have an ex-boyfriend who was studying this one animal. He disappeared. Go find his research. And that's it. That's how they outed him. I have an ex-boyfriend. He died. I don't know what happened to his research. That's it. And everyone was like, oh, he's gay. And nobody made a big deal out of it. It was just like, oh, okay. And it was so matter of fact. And it was just presented as is. And that was fine. And then in the later game, they're like, oh, I met a guy and we're going to get married. And it was, just, again, matter of fact. It wasn't like in the DLC, they made a big deal out of it. But like in the main game, it was just like, it was just what it was. And I was like, that is, it is not the late 90s, early 2000s. The world has accepted it. We can move on. If you want to do representation, this is the best way to do it. Same thing with, like, in the first game, there were a couple black characters, but they never made a big deal out of the fact that they were black characters. It was just like, here they are. They're good at their job. They're competent. They're likable. End of list. And I liked that they did representation in the perfect way. It was just like, here's a soldier. She's a woman. She's good at her job. Let's focus on the fact that she's good at her job. Let's not focus on the fact that she's a commander and she's a woman. Like, that's perfect. Perfect. I really like the game in terms of how they integrated representation into the storytelling. But I can also understand when people complain about games being in your face. I've also played other games where I'm also like, okay, I get it. Calm down.
In this case, the movie did cut the gay wedding. The reason given by the director is... The gay wedding was a beautiful slow moment,
but in a fast-paced movie.
In a fast-paced movie,
yeah.
They said it was pacing. Yep. It was an editorial decision around pacing. I think that that would make for a wonderful, you know, those old school DVD bonus features where in reality is probably going to be a TikTok that's going to go viral. But I'd love to see it, but I understand that maybe for the flow of the movie, it didn't make a lot of sense. Now, one video game that has queer representation that's gotten into particularly hot waters is the latest Assassin's Creed Shadows. This game, which I believe is going to be released in November, is set in 16th century Japan. Mm-hmm. And you can play two characters, either... do you have the name? Both. At the same time?
No. It depends on which mission as to which character you play.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Why didn't you give the quick update on that one?
So for those who haven't played Assassin's Creed games, basically it's taken from the perspective of like a character in the deep future who goes into like this machine to access like memories of the past. And then they go to some historical site, sometimes not even real, because like the Assassin's Creed that took place in Greece went back to like mythic Greece times, and there was like minotaurs and stuff, so it didn't have to be real. But in some games it actually is. So there was one of the earliest games took place in Italy, and the rendering of Vatican City was so realistic that you could actually use it as like a form of tourism. It was a to scale model. But anyway, so for the latest one, you're going back to medieval Japan, and it's causing international kerfuffle because they're saying it's based on real historical events, but they didn't actually hire a historian. And now you have historians looking at the trailer material saying, like, one of the easiest complaints to understand, because some of them are pretty deep, the people who made the game clearly didn't understand the difference between traditional Japanese and Chinese architecture. Like, there's Chinese architecture, not Chinese influence, which did happen, but Chinese architecture in this game. And one of the big things is one of the playable characters is a historical figure named Yasuke, who was a Black African from East Africa who showed up in Japan in the 1500s. And there's actual writings on him, but the game is depicting him as a landed gentry samurai who is openly gay and walks around town in his battle armor for some reason. And also he's carrying a sword that is, when they looked into it, they discovered that it was actually rendered off a toy prop piece that they bought off of Amazon from a One Piece. It's just everything about it. They're saying that the historical inaccuracies are to the point where it's kind of offensive. If you were to say based on historical events, that's one thing. But they're saying you could use this to learn history, and they're making claims about Yasuke that actual historians are saying there's no evidence that he was a real samurai. There is evidence that he never carried a sword. He actually carried it's a large wooden club with iron studs on it. It's actually an anti-armor weapon. He was known for carrying that. He was also known for his proficiency at wrestling. There's parts of modern sumo that came from Yasuke's ability to lift people and huck them from the ring. And they're just saying that everything about it is so poorly depicted and so focused on his ethnicity and sexuality. And there's no historical evidence that he was gay. And there's
I want to clarify here, because the Ubisoft, especially out of Quebec, there is a Canadian connection to this as well, which is where it's being developed. Mm. What they've noted is that this Assassin's Creed, such including the last couple as well, it's not just this one, but this is the third or fourth iteration where they've done this, is in the game, when you're playing the character, you can woo the non-playable characters, some of whom are male, some of whom are female. And you can also just have platonic relationships with all of the non-playable characters. Essentially, this will-they-won't-they romance element is now sort of gender blind in the game. So it's not that they've made him gay, is that the gameplay allows for same-sex romances, and that's where it is. But you're right, this game has typically paid a lot of attention to historical detail.
Yeah.
Our listeners may recall that
or mythical detail in the case of Greece.
Yeah.
And actually the Viking one as well.
And you may recall that the fire at the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, it was actually the Assassin's Creed development team that provided the Parisians with the highly detailed mapping of the Notre Dame because of the sheer amount of 3D rendering and detail that had gone into the game. So to get architecture from the wrong country in there, to get weapons that are fictional in there, it really doesn't add to it. I think it's interesting, but how seriously should we take this? It's just a game. You know what I
It
mean?
is just a game, but it's there are diplomats getting involved because the Japanese government takes their history very seriously, and they're seeing this as sort of a Western neo-colonialist attempt to steal other countries' histories and rewrite it in their own image. And it's turning into a political event that is really, on the one hand, really overinflamed because it is just a game, but on the other hand, Japan is kind of the birthplace of the modern video game. Like, it started with the Commodore 64, which is, I think, a UK-based company, either UK or America, Western anyway. But Japan famously, like, Nintendo and Sega really took the video game idea and ran with it. So we have this sort of Japanese history with video games, and the idea that the West is playing fast and loose with their history, they are taking it very personally. And if you were to say this is a fictionalized history, because I mean, if you look at anime, there's fictionalized histories all over the place. There are all sorts of historical depictions within Japan's own culture that is profoundly inaccurate, but they also made it clear this is an alternative history, this is a mythical history, this is a fictional history. They never slap based on a true story on it, unless they actually do have historians on set. And that is the thing that Assassin's Creed has done for decades now. They've been making these games that can be used. Like, the Italian one is especially known because it was usable as a tourism simulator, basically. And Japan's been waiting for their turn, and then it comes to their turn, and it's not even an ethnic Japanese person in the main role. And that caused some offense. And then the way that they depicted Yasuke, they're like, look, if you're going to go with Yasuke and put him in the game, that's fine. He was a real historical figure, but you're not even depicting him correctly. Everything about it, and he was only in Japan for like 5 or 6 years. So everything about it, they're just like, what are you doing? And the how it turned into something that made its way up to the Japanese Diet, which is their equivalent of like parliament, I find weird and interesting. But I mean, in American history, Hillary Clinton made a big deal out of the hot coffee mini game in the Grand Theft Auto games. So for things from video games to make its way all the way up to, the federal level, question period, is it's not new, but it is really quite fascinating that this game is turning into an event. It's actually considered to be part of Gamergate 2.0. And the fact that it's getting political now, like real political, not between quotation marks political, but there's actual
Big people.
diplomats involved, big P political, yeah,
Exactly. Well,
is pretty fascinating.
some of it is more smoke than fire. As I mentioned earlier, the illusions that they've made this main character, a gay black man, is a little disingenuous. They've made both main characters' sexuality dependent on the player. You can play both of them completely straight, or even asexual. You can choose not to have romantic
It's
relationships
a
with
game
people.
about assassinations. If you just want to go around murdering people, you can focus on that.
Exactly. And not that within the game, very
Well,
specifically.
yeah, within the game, yes.
Exactly. We are running out of time. I did want to say that we were keeping an eye out on international news, particularly the Supreme Court in Ghana just dismissed a challenge to the Criminal Code of 1960, which prohibits same-sex acts. They didn't give any reasons, but they have dismissed it. They said the reasons are forthcoming. The Oslo murderer during the Norwegian Pride, the Pride in Oslo a few years ago, has appealed his recent conviction. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, we've been keeping an eye on a number of stories, including a seventh person cured of HIV. But I will reiterate, we, like I said, but I think we've mentioned this for the last six people cured of HIV. He had leukemia, and it was a stem cell replacement.
It, again, with the leukemia, this is, I think, the second or third case of somebody with leukemia.
Exactly, yeah. And it's the stem cell replacement that seems to be...
yeah, there's also the theory that the blood becomes so hostile that it kills all bloodborne diseases.
Yeah, yeah. It roots out HIV from everywhere. So anyway, seventh person cured, but definitely not a practical solution moving forward.
With modern medicine, you're better off with HIV than leukemia, which is a really rough thing to say.
I know, yeah, it is true. Exactly. Yeah. All right, well, we have run out of time. We will be playing out with Jesse Lindsay's Pourvoirs from Sierre. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Avec un cœur glacé. Trop souvent, je pense au moment où tu as enlevé ma sérénité. Oh, 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 ma voix si fragile ne pouvait pas dire. Que tu aurais dû, contrôler tes pouvoirs de sorcier. Moi j'aurais dû être à désenchanter quand tu m'as montré tes pouvoirs de sorcier. Juste pas. Tes potions n'auront pas d'effet sur moi la prochaine fois. Oh, ma voix si fragile ne pouvait pas dire. Oh, ma voix si fragile ne pouvait pas dire. Que tu aurais dû, contrôler tes pouvoirs de sorcier. Moi j'aurais dû être à désenchanter quand tu m'as montré tes pouvoirs de sorcier.
Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Maybe you're a parent, a family member, employer, a coworker, an educator, a healthcare provider. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.